Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Adult entertainment has been with us for as long as, well, there have been adults. Think of the Dance of the Seven Veils that Salome performed for Herod. But despite that dance's biblical setting, most erotic dancing, whether it takes place in strip clubs, burlesque shows, or on a brightly lit stage full of Chippendale dancers, is just not a thing a city wants to be known for.
But if you live in Milwaukee, you have probably heard of the Silk Exotic Gentlemen's Club. If you haven't, you'll have another opportunity to learn when John Ferraro, the owner of Silk, opens a fourth club on Old World 3rd Street. The other three clubs are in Milwaukee, Juneau, and Madison.
Despite the taboo that often surrounds these establishments, there is no doubt that the industry is a lucrative one. And Ferraro set himself and his high-end clubs apart since he first went into the business in 2003.
Writer Steve Potter wrote a feature on John Ferraro for this month's Milwaukee Magazine, and he says he learned some pretty interesting insights into the business and the character of the man in charge.
John Ferraro, you know, grew up in Bayview. He went to Immaculate Conception Elementary, graduated from Bayview High School, and like a lot of other people in the service industry, he started working for someone else. In his case, it was his parents. They owned DeMarini's Pizzeria. And so in the early 90s, he, you know, kind of started working there as a cook, as a dishwasher, kind of moved up through the ranks to be bartender and manager. From there, one of the people that serviced some of the machines at that location came in, and John and this guy, Joe Modell, became friends, and they decided to eventually open a bar together. And that became the Bada Bing Social Club. And they opened that, I believe, in around 2001. And the interesting part about that is that these two, who would later go on to open up the Silk location, they named their first bar Bada Bing Social Club, which, as you may know from the Sopranos TV show, that was the name of the strip club there. So that's kind of how they got started and kind of went from there.
The whole point of strip clubs and things of that nature is to sell a fantasy, to have a place that's accessible for everyone to escape. So how has Ferraro's Clubs changed the adult industry in Wisconsin? What in particular sets his clubs apart compared to other ones that might be in the city?
Sure. He markets his clubs as, you know, high-end gentlemen's clubs. So it's kind of the same difference between, you know, your corner tap and maybe a nice downtown nightclub. His places are a lot cleaner, they're bigger, they're open, they're kind of updated. They call them the floorman. At a nightclub, you might call them a bouncer, but they're dressed in full suits, and they've got, like, earpieces in, you know, very formal kind of situation. So it's just a higher end spot than some of the other strip clubs that you may see, which may be kind of, you know, be described as seedy or dark. They're not bright, but they've got high-end sound systems and kind of nicer amenities.
Did he ever explain what his drive to make his clubs high-end was? He, you know, grew up working in a restaurant industry, so some could argue it would be easy enough to slip into opening your own restaurant. Why did he choose a high-luxury gentleman's club?
Well, one of his business partners came across a trade publication, actually, for strip clubs, and he brought the idea up to John Ferraro. So they scouted a bunch of places. They went to some spots in Chicago, I think maybe also in Las Vegas. And they found out how lucrative it could be to open up a strip club. And so they just went for it that way. I think money was always in the front of his mind.
Right. And you mentioned these clubs are very lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
The clientele, the staff are professional, dressed nice as well. Drinks are usually higher at his clubs, you know, to keep, as you quote, the riffraff out. So the extra cost and style that's added to clubs. But people often just associate strip clubs or exotic gentlemen's clubs with riffraff, with undesirable actions or happenings. So do you think Silk can ever change the public's perception of these places?
Well, you know, the perception is that, you know, these places are unholy, they're sinful, they're, you know, naked women are dancing, for lack of a better word, around. And do I think that Silk can change that perception? Probably not. But they can offer a different alternative to some of the seedier places, I think. It's quite a different atmosphere. I don't know if you've ever been to any strip clubs, but some of them are kind of wretched places.
Mm-hmm.
And his are pretty nice, actually.
He also has some different rules to follow at these clubs. What are some of those that keep both the workers and the clients that come in check?
Well, of course, there's no videotaping or cameras allowed, and that's kind of unique given, you know, it's 2017. Everybody's taking selfies basically constantly. You have to be respectful. You know, there's different things you can and can't do as far as touching. There's some rules, depending on the municipality, of rules about how much the women can take off, or the men. Some, they do have some men dancing in some special occasions, how much they can, you know, disrobe. There's some dress codes involved. Those seem to be kind of loosely enforced. But yeah, it's a high level of respect.
You mentioned municipalities may have different rules for the various clubs, and there's typically a lot of concern from city officials and residents in neighborhoods where strip clubs are located, or even if they're proposed to be located at a new place. Do you think that festers out eventually? Did you speak with people who were around the area of Silk Nightclub who just see it as a part of the neighborhood now, or do you think it just accumulates as another business eventually?
Well, I've spoken with John Ferraro and some other people about them and how they move into different neighborhoods. And after a while, if there are no issues, then it kind of just becomes a different business. You know, they open up later in the evening. I think the earliest some of them open up is probably like 7 p.m. The one in Milwaukee isn't in a residential area, kind of off the highway. So I don't think that they have a lot of concerns there from residents. But in talking with other strip club owners as well, is that they, if they keep things clean, they keep things orderly, they don't have a lot of issues, then they just kind of sink into the neighborhood and people don't pay them a mind, pay them much attention.
John Ferraro already owns three clubs, but he is in a battle with the city of Milwaukee to open a club downtown. So what are the ongoing issues there? And what is essentially the constitutionality of operating strip club that he feels he is entitled to that the city is obstructing?
Sure. Well, the latest on that is that the city council, common council, did agree to allow a club for the Silk owners to be downtown on Old World 3rd Street. They made an agreement with the city in that all of those who were partnering to open up that club had to drop their lawsuits. They would not apply for new licenses. They would not apply for other locations in the city in order to grant them this downtown license. And the battle there, it's always been that the secondary effects are what the residents and the neighborhood and the alders are concerned about, you know, parking, crime, litter, that kind of thing. So they had to overcome that, and they've talked about different security and maybe cleaning up, you know, afterwards if there was any trash. So that's been the primary concern. So as the deal stands right now, John Ferraro won't be a part of the ownership of the downtown Milwaukee club. That was the decision he made. I spoke to him since the article was near to come out, and he said he's going a different direction, and he's pretty sure that his business partners, who also have, you know, more than a dozen years of experience, can handle it.
So he's not owning it, but it's just part of the Silk franchise.
Yeah, he won't be listed as an owner or in a management role, he said. He told me.
Okay. Do you think that he's willing to, well, obviously the going the extra mile is already written into these things, that they do need to be extra cautious and pay attention to the secondary effects, as you mentioned. Is John Ferraro the type to be incredibly scrupulous about his businesses anyway?
Yeah, I think he has a pretty heavy hand in all of the three locations. He told me he spends a couple days at each one, kind of rotating around between Milwaukee, Juneau, and Madison. So I think he definitely has an idea of what's going on at all of the clubs, and he wants to keep the license because then he'll make more money. So I don't think that he'd let anything run afoul.
His name still is kind of swirled in some controversy, whether it's affirmed or not, but he was involved in supposedly involved in a money laundering case in California, referred to as Russian Laundry. So how does he feel about this, and if people do find out about this, it doesn't really help his reputation or case, although the strip club is approved for downtown. How does he intend to, say, counterbalance those accusations and what he's had to go through with that versus keeping his clubs and his name respectable?
he did not want to talk about this at all with me. He called the news reports about the Russian laundry racketeering cases as not true. They were fraud. He denies very much that he was involved at all. And I couldn't actually corroborate or substantiate any of the allegations that were made in the news reports because the items that were referenced in those news reports were resealed by the courts. So he wasn't involved at all, he says. It was a former business partner that was involved, and they just have to drag his name through the mud with it. But I think it has put a kind of a stink on his name. It's difficult to get out from under that. I think that a lot of the alders were very surprised to see him involved with that, and it raises some red flags. City Attorney's Office, however, has said that, you know, he hasn't been convicted of anything, so nothing can apply or stop him from applying or even being granted or keeping a license because he hasn't been convicted of anything.
Would that change in the future, or is this a case that's going to kind of fizzle out?
I think it's done. The people in California, the attorneys there, the prosecutors, got as close to saying that it was over as they could to me. I don't think that there are going to be any more charges coming out of it.
So after speaking with John, what's your impression of him? And do you think his demeanor just exemplifies his business success? Your article mentions he's kind of desensitized to the strippers over there, the women. It's clearly how is my business operating and functioning, and all these people and staff are merely moving parts of making that money. So what do you think has kept him so successful in this business?
I think that he likes to be successful. He's good at it, and he's making a lot of money. And he's also, you know, for these 13-some years now, been kind of in an adversarial role where he's constantly had to defend his businesses from the very start. You know, it's a sinful, unholy business. And he's constantly have to explain to people that it's just entertainment and there's only dancing going on at his clubs and nothing else. And so he's always having to push back against negative comments. And I think that's kind of, he's built up a bit of a wall to that, but he's very successful, and he's going to, I imagine, if he stays involved in it, continue to be very successful.
What was your experience like spending a night at Silk and interviewing him there, since you were going in with a relatively objective reporter stance versus a patron going in?
Sure. Well, first of all, I never met John. I only spoke to him over the phone.
Okay.
He's kind of turned off by the media because of the Russian laundry reports and just all of the negative press and over the years battling City Hall. He's kind of feels attacked, I think. So he either didn't have the time or wasn't all that interested to meet with me personally. So I went into Silk one night and spent about 8 hours there. It was actually kind of exhausting. Usually when you go to these places, you know, you're with some friends, you're kind of distracted, you're having a good time, having a couple cocktails. I was there absorbing the scene and soaking it all up, and there's a lot going on. There's lights, there's loud music, there's the dancers, there's the patrons. You know, I didn't shield who I was. I had my notebook out. I had my kind of identification on. I wasn't bothering people, but if they came up and, you know, started talking with me, I told them who I was. That scared off some of the guys. Some other people were interested in chatting with me and, you know, joking about, oh, gee, that's a tough assignment. But it was pretty exhausting to be there for 8 hours. Of course, you know, I was mostly just sitting around. I wasn't doing any of the dancing, especially in high heels.
Right.
So I think it was much more exhausting for some of the women there that were there as long as I was,
yeah,
actually working.
Do you view strip clubs any differently after doing this story?
I didn't have all that bad of a attitude towards them in the beginning. I think that I may have grown to respect the dancers a bit more. Most of them that I spoke to are mothers, and they're just there for the money. They kind of tune out when they get to work, or they turn on a different persona, you know, that they're there for the money. But yeah, after doing the story, I definitely see it as really just a business. It's a sexy business, but it's a business.
Right. And I'm curious, if John is so against media and how he's been portrayed in the past, why did he agree to do this in the first place?
You know, I don't know why he chose to speak to me. I actually got to him through a friend, Phil Helmuth, who's in the story. He's the professional gambler, world champion. And I actually talked to him first. And I think that Ferraro's buddy kind of was feeling me out and, you know, seeing if I had passed the test, because about 10 minutes after that interview, John Ferraro gave me a call. And it was difficult to get him on the phone. You know, I would just call him at random times, see if he had 10 minutes to talk, and I did that about a dozen times. So we had a lot of interviews, but it was he was always cordial, nice, and answered all my questions.
Well, I suppose it's a good thing that everyone can get this little insider perspective and perhaps view all the developments downtown in a different way, or just at least to be a little more knowledgeable about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Steve Potter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Steve Potter is a writer who lives in Madison. He wrote an article on the Silk Exotic Gentlemen's Club owner, John Ferraro, and it can be found in this month's issue of Milwaukee Magazine. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski.